Next Sunday, we're going to have a special occasion. Sri Anantaraman is going to come from Anandashram. He's traveling here in America, and he's promoting the idea of chanting for world peace. It's an idea that Mother Krishnabai began many years ago. They accomplished an initial goal. You have so many millions of Ram Nams that have been sent in by writing or that have been counted in chanting. It is very cute, though. When I was at the ashram the first time, I'd go in the evening and I'd sit with Swamiji, and they were basically doing business. They somehow allowed me to sit there with them and conducting business and so forth. And in walks this little girl. I would gauge she's perhaps 11 years old or so. And the first night she asked for beads in order to do her mantra with and count them with. So she was given these blessed beads and off she went. Then every night she would come in, her mother would come in with her. She lived nearby at the ashram there. In fact, the ashram had given her a house for her family to live in. And she'd come in and she'd proudly announce, she'd stand there very straight and tall, and she'd say, I did 11 malas. I did 11 rounds in the 108 malas. And off she would go. And whenever she left, they would just break out laughing because nobody knew exactly why she was coming or, you know, other than she just took it upon herself to do this. So every night she would come in, she spoke in Malayalam, so they would translate for me. And they said, oh, tonight she did 11 malas. And so one night she comes in and she says that she had done 6 malas. And so after she had left and they were translating for me, I said, only 6? Yes, she had a lot of homework tonight. So Anantaraman has grown up in close proximity of the ashram all of his life. His father was made a swami at a certain age later in life by Papa, which is a rare thing. There's other people who had asked Swamiji or Papa Ram Dass for initiation into sannyas, and he wouldn't give it. But I think there's maybe a handful that he gave initiation, and Anantaraman's father was one of those. Anantaraman has been a family man. He has a wife and children. He's just a lovely, lovely individual, totally dedicated, working at the ashram there. And so he's wanting to take that spirit of the ashram and bring it. So we're going to be meeting on Wednesday night up in Bellingham at Jill and Greg's for the regular center meeting there. And then here we're going to be meeting over at the Vo Center, where retreat center where we have met for Mother Hamilton's Mahasamadhi date. So that'll be at the regular time, and there'll be a potluck there as well. So I hope that you all come and spread the word. You know, this is something that he's wanting to promote within the community and have go out. And he chants Ram Nam himself, but it's just chanting God's name by whatever you choose to call. One time Papa was asked whether Ram Nam had special meaning, and of course it does, and it has a long history to it. But he said, really, any name that you chant with faith, perfect faith in God, will take you all the way to God realization. And he told the story of a man who wanted to get initiation from a master, but he didn't feel worthy of really getting into close proximity with the master. So he would creep by and listen from a distance, and he didn't want to be noticed, so he couldn't hear. Finally, he got close enough, he heard one word, pestle, like a mortar and pestle. And he took that with complete faith. Ah, my guru has told me a pestle, a pestle. So he starts repeating pestle again and again and again and again because he had such complete faith in it. And when it came for his time to leave the body, a golden pestle, it is said, came down from heaven, took him up and all the way up into heaven. So so it's the faith and the love and the devotion that we bring to something. I want to read, we have a baptism today. I want to read from the autobiography of a yogi, chapter 1. My parents in early life, the characteristic features of Indian culture have long been a search for ultimate verities an icon commitment disciple guru relationship. My own path led me to a Christ-like sage whose beautiful life was chiseled for the ages. He was one of the great masters who are India's sole remaining wealth. Emerging in every generation, they have bulwarked their land against the fate of Babylon and Egypt. I find my earliest memories covering the anachronistic features of a previous incarnation. Clear recollections came to me of a distant life, a yogi amidst the Himalayan snows. These glimpses of the past by some dimensionless link also afforded me a glimpse of the future. The hapless humiliations of infancy are not banished from my mind. I was resentfully conscious of not being able to walk or express myself freely. Have you ever thought of a little baby like that, being fully conscious in that way? Prayerful surges arose within me as I realized my bodily impotence. My strong emotional life took silent form as words in many languages. Among the inward confusion of tongues, my ear gradually accustomed itself to the circumambulant Bengali syllables of my people. The beguiling scope of an infant's mind, adultly considered limited to toys and toes. Psychological ferment in my unresponsive body brought me to many obstinate crying spells. I recall the general family bewilderment at my distress. Happier memories, too, crowd in on me, my mother's caresses, and my first attempts at lisping phrase and a toddling step. These early triumphs, usually forgotten quickly, are yet a natural basis of self-confidence. My far-reaching memories are not unique. Many yogis are known to have retained their self-consciousness without interruption by the dramatic transition to and from life, in quotes, and death, in quotes. If man be solely a body, its loss indeed places the final period to identity. But if prophets down the millennium speak the truth, man is essentially of incorporeal nature. The persistent core of human egoity is only temporarily allied with sense perception. Although odd and clear memories of infancy are not extremely rare, during travels in numerous lands, I have listened to early recollections from the lips of voracious people, men and women. So then he goes on, of course, to tell his life story. It's a marvelous thing, really, when we think about it, that what is embodied in a seed, any seed of nature, when the spermatozoa and the ovum come together and form a seed within the womb of the woman, a tremendous thing is in process. Who could guess from a single cell that an entire human being could emerge from that and achieve the potential that is possible? That seed is vastly important, but it is not the be-all, end-all. We come to think of this body as our own, and perhaps our only possession, and that if we were to be absent of this body, then we would be absent of life. This turns the spiritual world on its head, and it's the worldly perception. As we grow in consciousness, we come to realize that we are more than this body. When we first begin to meditate, we attempt to put our mind upon the ajna and the breath, and we start to repeat certain mantras or syllables. And as the mind gets quiet, every once in a while, we may trigger some kind of an experience. We may suddenly feel ourselves expanded beyond this body. We know that we have a body, but yet we seem to be beyond it as well. We start to touch into higher realms. And as we do this, it begins to prove to our mind that we are more than this body. I remember the first time that I had this experience where I was sitting in meditation, and as I was uplifted in consciousness, I suddenly had an expansion of time as well, and time stretched out to the beginning of my life in this body. And then it continued to stretch back over a continuum beyond where this body started. And contained within those memories were both experiences in the physical realm at previous times, as well as astral realm and beyond. And then my mind was aware of stretching in front of me and coming to that finality, as some people think of it, of what we call death. And as that death occurs, then consciousness continues to stretch out on that continuum as far as consciousness is able to hold it. And so through these kinds of profound inner experiences, I came to realize that I am not this body. Now, I can think that, and yet to know it is something completely different. In order to realize this truth, we have to go deep within ourselves. And as we know, there are many barriers to doing this. We are addicted to this body and to the things of the senses. And so as soon as we sit down to quiet the mind doesn't quiet down, does it? It becomes active. We begin to have daydreams. We begin to think about the past and the future and everything in between. And so in order to really quiet the mind requires real dedication. And yet none of this would be possible if grace were not operating inside of us. It is grace that has called us to the path. It is grace that calls us to go within into deeper experiences. If some individual does not have that grace, they really can't be blamed for not seeking out anything higher. They can live accountable to live a good life, a moral life, a decent life, and that they should do. But to automatically assume that everyone should be called inwardly is not how things are. There seems to be a right time, a right season for everyone and everything. And when we are ready to wake up suddenly, nothing could be more important. We have to know it. We have to realize it. And until then, we realize that we were just idling our time. And now we really want something new. We want something greater. Is this the kind of awakening that Papa writes about in The Divine Life, entitled, Arise, Ye Youth. The world is thrilling with expectations of a new consciousness, a new renaissance. The very air is surcharged with the messages of brotherhood, harmony, and unity of mankind. The accumulated wisdom of ages is flowing out through vehicles inspired with spirit of this great ideal. The narrow conceptions, the denominational shibboleths, and vague slogans that hitherto lured people astray from the path of peace, goodwill, and fellowship are being rejected. Experience all over the world has opened the eyes of man to the infinite possibilities of human life and purpose. We are now rising on the crest of a gigantic wave, imbued with the invincible power of the almighty truth. Intercommunication on physical plane having been, through the discoveries of science, facilitated with amazing results, annihilating distance, has brought all peoples of the earth within the folds of a common feeling of near kinship and intimate cooperation. The days for thinking on problems affecting humanity on terms of narrow, individual, communal, or even national lines have passed. The dawn heralding a universal consciousness, subtly and irresistibly breaking through the lesser ideals that have hitherto influenced the affairs of the world, is facing us on all sides. The glorious sun of the Spirit of Harmony, whose rays had ages ago shed their healing and elevating brilliance, is again dispelling the darkness of ignorance in the heart of mankind. This sun, it is admitted on all hands, arose in the east, although with the passage of time, this sun of eternal wisdom had been, for longer or shorter intervals, hidden behind dark clouds. We are now beholding that the clouds are being scattered by the benevolent hand of Providence as already feel the warmth, light, and glow of this eternally radiant orb. On whom does the task of carrying the banner of brotherhood and peace so that the messages of the wise may be fulfilled devolve? Who should come forward and to work out the divine plan in bringing about a blessed change in the destiny of mankind? Who are the real custodians of peace and harmony in the years to come? Who should gird their loins in a united endeavor for the regeneration of the world? By whose sacrifice and adventurous spirit can the present great awakening be led towards its exalted consummation? Yes, this magnificent work rests on the youth of the world. O young men and women, turn ye from the ways of apathy and irresponsibility. Turn ye from the path of false ambitions and vain pursuits. Marshal yourself as the very soldiers and take your proper place in the great world-affecting movement that has been started. Hasten ye to strain your every nerve, utilize every iota of your energy, to offer every minute of your life, nay, to dedicate your very existence to the service of the great cause that demands your concentrated attention and wholehearted cooperation. Youth is the hope of the world. Arise, O ye blooming flowers of humanity, and shed your beauty and fragrance all around. Light your lamps, O friend, and march onward, leading mankind to the goal of true blessedness, peace, and happiness. Isn't that magnificent? And what a vision. What a vision. And Papa and Mother and Master were at the headwaters of this gigantic movement that's starting from the east and flowing out all over this world. It's a wonderful time to be alive. It's a wonderful time to be engaged. No matter what your age is, youth is something that is of the spirit. It is not just a identity with this body. Because in spirit we are ever youthful. We are ever youthful. Whatever the condition of your body is, you can be ever youthful. Now, some people may say, well, that's easy for you to say. You don't have my body and all the problems that I have. But the fact is that spirit is eternally youthful, right within you. And when you tap into it, you feel it. You feel the effects of it. There may be moments where you shed all identity with this body and you stand in that spirit because that is the one true eternal nature that is within you. And so we take that message from Papa. We take it as a clarion call to action. Now, action can mean many things. Lari Mahasya used to talk about karma yoga as being kriya yoga. And that's an interesting concept, isn't it? Because we usually think of karma yoga as going out and serving other people. But the movement of the life force through the spine and the brain, that action combined with the breathing, takes us into new realms. And it is definitely an activity. It is not an end in itself. What it is designed to do is to bring us into a still state of consciousness. We meditate, what we generally call meditate, as a verb. It is an action. It is an activity. But meditate is also a noun. It is a state of being. But rare is it for the person to attain the state of being. They're mostly involved in activity. But it is all designed to bring us to that still state. Ramana Maharshi, the great realized being from South India, was just 16 years old. And one day, somehow, just a great fear of death came over him. He was an ordinary student at school. He had come home from school that afternoon, and he had this terrible fear of death coming over him. And finally, he got a hold of himself, and he said, all right, what is it, this death? And he laid down on the floor, and he said, all right, what is it like to die? Who am I? Well, he held his breath. He was there still like a corpse. And he realized that he still had consciousness. Now, not being born an ordinary soul, he immediately went into a state of samadhi, just like that. And really, it's no different for any of us if we could fully and put our attention on God in that way. Sri Yukteswar said that anybody who puts their full attention upon God at any moment can be realized in that moment. But we hold on to the things of the old, not just consciously, but subconsciously as well. We have put many things into action down through the years. And so when we struggle with these things, when we don't just lie down once and imagine what it's like to be dead and then go into samadhi, we shouldn't get frustrated or disappointed. It would be nice, wouldn't it? I'd love to sit down and play a piano like a concert pianist, but I've never learned how to play and I've never practiced. So it's not likely to happen. Why was Ramana Maharshi able to do that? Because he had attained that level through vigorous work in previous lifetimes. And the truth is, he came to be an avatar, a realized being, born into this earth, into an earthly body. And so it happened for him. That was his moment for awakening. Every avatar has a different kind of incarnation. Mother described them in two different ways. She said there are the avatars. They're born consciously realized. Now, Nande Moy Ma said that she had that realization from the very beginning, much as Master is describing here, having such clarity of thought, even from his birth. She had clarity of realization of her oneness with God. And it wasn't until later that she put herself through 7 years of doing sadhana. She felt the separation that she had never felt since she was born. And then she spontaneously went through so many different kinds of spiritual practices in order to become realized. And she did this so she might be able to identify with the struggles of those who came to her for their realization. There was a couple when I was living in Bellingham who were also living in Bellingham, and they were devotees of Anande Moy Ma. So they came to our meditation group that we were having up there, and they told us an amazing story. They said that they had been initiated through self-realization fellowship into Kriya Yoga, and that they were having difficulty with it. They were having difficulty managing their sexual energy and so on. And they talked to Ma about it, and she said, "I want you to practice the Kriya Yoga here and show me what you're doing." So they did so. And she said, "What you need to do is when you get back to America, you go to Mother Hamilton. She lives in Seattle, and she'll show you the correct way of practicing Kriya Yoga." Isn't that amazing? And so they did, and they went down, and Mother showed them their practice. And, of course, they were devotees of Ma, but Mother gave them that instruction. And so then it worked out for them, and it started to work better for them. These are wonderful times that we live in. You know, somehow we come rather to be dull about our daily lives so oftentimes. We don't realize the miraculous nature that every moment holds. Could you imagine, rather than waking up and thinking, "Oh, it's just one more day and I need to get dressed and perhaps go off to work," whatever the day holds for you, and you feel a little down and not too much energy and not too much enthusiasm about it, dreaming perhaps of another day when you'll have more free time and more money and things you'd like to do, and just think of what you're missing. You're missing everything about life. You're missing the wonderful nature. This seed of consciousness is right within you, and it is divine consciousness. Now, why don't we realize it? It is because as we have entered into this life, so many times we have these kind of memories that Master is talking about as we enter into the body, but we don't hold them, you see. we start to get focused. It's difficult being in this body. If you're born about the age that I was, it's likely that the doctor picked you up by your feet when you came out of your mother and gave you a whack on the back. Welcome to the world. And it's a tough boot camp here. And so you get focused on this world, and sometimes it's painful and sometimes it's pleasurable, but it's all engrossing. And so the things of the astral, the things of your previous lives, they all begin to merge into the background because you don't need it. And it's not demanded in that moment. So it's the mind being utilitarian about it, just simply lets it go into the unconscious. But at some point, if we are blessed, we remember the freedom and the joy and the light that we once experienced as a divine being. We grow tired of being in this tiny little body and all of its limitations, like Master crying. I used to, many years ago, I would get irritated. It was kind of like fingernails on chalkboard to hear a small babe just screaming at the top of its lungs. It's hard to be around. And then one day I was thinking, you know, little one, you're just fresh from the astral heavens and you're right into this body. Of course you're screaming like that. You're comparing the two, and you're not liking the comparison too much. The truth be told, we as adults would probably be screaming like that too if we weren't conditioned out of it, although I make it a pretty noisy world. So we don't do it. And once I identified with that child and with how difficult it is, you know, they sleep 20 hours of the day sometimes, and they're in the astral world, and they're gradually merging themselves into this human consciousness. But so often, souls begin to awaken to samskaras, those tendencies that they bring with them from the past. And so this body consciousness begins to take over, and then not just all the attention we have to put at it in the moment, but all the past associations, all the past habits begin to waken up at different stages. And so you get to a certain stage, and suddenly you want to do a certain thing that had never really dawned on you before. It could be a good thing or a bad thing. But suddenly that takes on relevance. And why? You can say it's your environment, and certainly environment is important. But there are also these tendencies that you bring over from the past. For some reason, I never took up smoking when I was growing up and going through junior high and high school. I would say almost all of my friends did smoke. But my one smoking experience was when my father, when I was 6 years old, I asked him for a cigarette because he smoked every day. I wondered, do they taste good? What do they do for you? So he lit one up for me. He said, now take a nice deep breath. And he made me smoke that thing all the way down to the filter, and I never picked up a cigarette after that. But for some reason, I just didn't take it up. And so why do you take up one thing? Why is one thing a problem and something else isn't a problem? And it is because of these past tendencies that we brought in. And as we hover over our developing body that's in the mother's womb, our consciousness begins to imprint itself upon that developing soul. And there are genetic switches that get switched on, and some of them get switched off. At one time, scientists were talking about your genetics as if it was a sentence to you. This is the way it's going to be for you. Now, more and more, they're beginning to reflect this idea that there are options, that you can switch those genes on and switch them off. True, you may have some tendencies, and if you go down certain roads, those things may become bigger problems for you. Or they may act as a bulwark of strength for you, depending on what those tendencies are. But as the consciousness merges itself into that body and identifies with it, it helps in the formation of that body so that that body is perfect for that soul and what that soul has come to learn and what it needs. Now, we may not always think that it's perfect. And from a human perspective, we could say not everything is born perfect. But from a divine perspective, it's the perfect balance of this universe working itself out through your body. So these are tremendous things that we bring with us, and it's why we forget who and what we truly are. But we don't need to remain in that condition, because just like that there was a seed inside from the mother and the father that started the physical body, there's even a more powerful seed, a seed of divine consciousness. Now, Mother described that at a certain point in your development, there are excretions that come right from within your body, the pineal and the pituitary gland. And from those excretions, they come together. It's a virginal birth because the two glands remain separate. But they come, those secretions come together, and then it forms a seed right within your own system. And it follows down the ganglionic nervous system and gets deposited in a cave-like area just behind the stomach. So this is a different kind of seed. This is the seed potential for all the experiences that you're going to go through in order to achieve your realization. And then that seed travels, if the Herod comes up, and Herod is the passions, and it wants to expel that seed. And it does it through sexual action. And so that if that seed is robbed of its value at that time, and then it just drops away. But then another seed will be formed, and when we're ready, and we have the will and the consciousness to hold that seed, then the seed travels down to the base of the spine, and that place is Egypt, symbolically. And it is from Egypt, then, that that seed begins to travel up the spine. It does it with the kundalini energy. Now, this kundalini energy is a tremendously powerful life force. It's a specialized life force that lies in reserve at the base of the spine. It was a wonderful day, so many years ago, the first time that that kundalini force awakened in me. And it did so powerfully and had me so riveted at the ajna, at the third eye point, that I couldn't take my attention off of it, even if I had wanted to. But I was fascinated by it. And so that power erupted, and eventually it began to draw back down again. But then it took me on to a course of many, many years as this evolutionary force began to change and transform me. It began to change this physical body and this astral body and this causal body. Now, just because we start these experiences does not mean that we will complete them. It has been said by Jesus that many are called, but few are chosen. And I would say it a little bit differently. I don't know exactly how the translation has worked it out. But I would say many are called, but few choose. Because it requires your choice. It requires a willingness. There are people who start out on a spiritual experiences and get uplifted, and it scares them. And they push it away. They're overwhelmed by it all. They're not sure that they want it to happen. Suddenly they feel out of control. It's all right to hear the stories, you know. But when it begins to happen to you, it's something different. You think, oh my goodness, I'm out of control here. What might happen to my life? What's going to happen to me? But it's a lack of trust in the divine, you see, that keeps us in that field of separation. But if you make yourself willing, then that divine energy courses up through your spine. And it takes you through many, many, many experiences. But that seed goes up, and as it goes to each one of the chakras, you face the positive and the negative of each one of those chakras, those centers that are in the spine. And each one represents a different level of consciousness. And so this is what you go through as you go up through these different levels. And it is the Christ seed that's being taken up through the center of the spine, the astral spine, the Sushumna, and it's gathering his disciples with him. Now, there are 12 disciples, that are talked about in the Bible. There are 6 centers, and each side has a polarity. And so there are 12 in total, and he gathers his disciples to him. And the multitudes start getting drawn to him. That is, all the different aspects of your consciousness begins to draw, some in a positive and some in a negative way. And this is something that people have to understand about this spiritual path, is it is everything. It challenges you on every possible level. And it also brings strength. to every one of your strengths, but you feel fears that you never felt before. You have difficulties that you never had before, and sometimes you think you're going backwards. And the truth is, you're really on the path. And the only real thing you need to keep track of is your mind on God or not. And if it is, then you will go through these experiences and go up to the next level. And then you go through it again. And sometimes it stretches you as far as you think you can be stretched, and then a little bit more. And it's tough, but it's doable. You can do this. Sometimes when people hear Mother talk about her experiences, they turn away from it. They think, oh, I don't want to go through that. But Mother assured us that none of us would have to go through all that she went through, because she did it for all of us. And she did it as an example to mankind, so that they may know the truth of these Christian scriptures in particular. She might bring that to the West. Now, that is the ultimate goal. And it is a time of transformation. It is a time for seeds to begin to find fruition. For the seed within yourself, that Christ seed, to find the fruition of Christ consciousness, to rise up above this body and to feel your unity with the divine consciousness, and through that, with all creation. This is the time, you see. How often we get dull to this world, as if it doesn't matter what we do. Now, we have a free will, so we have a right to live our lives the way we choose. But the truth is, once we leave this body, then we have to be honest with ourselves, because that soul consciousness comes forward and say, what did you do with your life? And we're accountable for it. Did we do everything in our power to gain our own realization and be of loving service to this world? Were we honest? Did we obey even the basic rules? As Mother Krishnabai said, the ABCs. And she turned around to the people who were around, people at the ashram. She said, you're not even learning the ABCs. How do you expect to go forward? Roy Eugene Davis, Master's disciple, he said one time, you need a living guru because sometimes you need a kick in the butt, to put it bluntly. And it's true. It's true. We need to awaken, not just be complacent, not just dawdle along in our life. Now, we still have a life to live, so we still have family, we still have work, we still have all the things of this world. But in balance with that, and first and foremost, not just in balance, but first and foremost comes God. And then we find out through our own inner discovery that there is no such thing as that which is of God and that which is not of God. It is all God. All this world is a fabulous creation of God. It is a blissful expression of divine consciousness. And the truth is, we're swimming in a sea of bliss. But how many know it? How many realize it? That this world is scintillating with light from every single atom. That you have the most marvelous life within you to awaken to realize, to know, and then to grow in, and to think that we just idle our time away. So this lovely, lovely seed that is born within the child, and Krishna assures us that no matter what we do in life, no matter how bad we are, no matter what bad decisions we make, we cannot change that perfect, original innocence that is contained within every one of us. And that's true for all creation. It remains pure. It remains unsullied. So that's actually quite a different talk than I had imagined before I got up here. I love this path that we're on for many reasons, and one of them is that it's not antithetical towards family, towards child raising. In fact, it's completely friendly and completely compatible. There are some spiritual masters who talk about this world as a delusion and we have to get away from it and all the rest of it, and really talk down about marriage and family. And that is their path. That's the one that they're called to. But we are householder yogis and yoginis. That is our path. And to embrace that means to embrace the children that come into this world, to love them, to bring them up with the best possible values, the best possible way that we can, and to launch them onto their own journey. And so we make this path, you know, in India, if there one aspect of loving God is loving the little baby Krishna, even as some really love the little baby Jesus, and especially around Christmas time. And to think of this child, this being, coming into the world with all the potential of a Krishna, of a Christ, that seed is deeply born in them. And why is it so oftentimes it took us so long to awaken to that fact? Nobody ever told us. Nobody ever taught us. In fact, sometimes we are taught that we're miserable sinners and that we can't know God in this lifetime, and seeds of separation. How destructive and how not true. So this is the time of awakening. It's a time for you. It's a time for these little ones. But when you see these little ones, don't just see a tiny little body. See the vast expanse of soul that one is. And really, see that for everybody. Just make it a practice. When you meet somebody, perhaps you learn their name, shake their hands, have some greeting. But do you look to see God within them? Because when you do that, you help to awaken God within them. Isn't that a marvelous thing? People are receptive to our thoughts, to the energy that we transmit. And so when you see God in this one, not just the personality, but God, it's easy to get caught up in this human drama. But to see God in them is to see them as they truly are. And then, you know, perhaps they'll want to live up to that. But if all you see is their faults, if all you see are problems, then you reinforce that. And really, is that what you want to do? Closing today with a writing from a song of Kabir. Subtle is the path of love. Therein there is no asking and no not asking. There one loses oneself at his feet. There one is immersed in the joy of seeking, plunged in the deeps of love as a fish in the water. The lover is never slow in offering his head for the service of his Lord. Kabir Clear declares the secret of this love.